Our main speaker tonight is Bob.
So, hello. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Bob. Hi, everybody. Very grateful to be here tonight. I'm grateful to be alive, and I'm grateful to be sober. Just to be sober. I'm sober today because of a loving God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am very grateful. I have this very strong urge to say Dominus Vobiscum, but I won't. I'm an old altar boy, so I'm very at home up here. I want to thank Ron for asking me to speak tonight. I haven't been in this building since about 1987 when I got sober. In 1984, I used to come to Midtown every Tuesday and Thursday, religiously. And I was sitting outside before I got up here early, as I always tried to do, and I was realizing, wow, look at all these beautiful women walking by. And I thought back to 1984, 85, 86, when I used to sit there, and I noticed none of that. All I could think of is, where is everybody? When's the meeting going to start? You know, and I realized that over the years, priorities change, and the way I view things change. But I always try to come back to basics. Don't drink, make meetings. And that's what kept me sober. I'm a low-bottom drunk. I drank for a long time. And I learned very early on about gratitude. I got sober in the Bronx, and when I was at the VA, a fellow we called Billy the Bus Driver brought a meeting in. And Billy the Bus Driver has since passed on, but he died a champion. He died sober. And he told me, grateful alcoholics don't drink. I had no idea what it meant to be grateful, but I knew that I didn't want to drink anymore. And so I started looking into this word, gratitude. I went to a meeting up at Madison 73 one Saturday night, and I heard a lady say that gratitude is a muscle. You got to work it. So when you need it, it's there. And I remembered all these things. When I was young, I had no gratitude. I had wants. You owed me everything. I was the youngest child, and I got what I wanted when I wanted it. I wasn't raised in a wealthy family. Both my parents worked, but they were real good people, and I pretty much got what I wanted all the time. Unfortunately, I carried that attitude with me my whole life, and it's a rude awakening when I left the family home, when I went to the military, and I started seeing that you don't get what you want all the time, you know, and I acted out a lot. You know, alcohol was always there and helped me to act. Growing up, I was always scared. I always felt I didn't fit. I felt I was different. I felt that if I let you know what I was really feeling inside, you'd point and laugh. I can remember being at family gatherings, being the bartender. I was about 9, 10 years old. My father would say, go to the kitchen, get so-and-so a scotch and soda, so-and-so a Presbyterian, and so-and-so a beer. I didn't know Presbyterian was a religion until I was about 20. I thought it was whiskey, ginger ale, and club soda. And I used to run to the kitchen and mix the drinks, open the cans of beer, and everything I mixed and opened, I tasted. And when I tasted alcohol, it was like magic. I lit up, the world around me lit up. And I knew on a certain level that alcohol would be around me for a long, long time. I got really drunk for the first time when I was about 12 years old, drank alcoholically. My parents were out of the house, and I had a friend up. It was a Saturday afternoon, and I drank whiskey, scotch, gin, beer, got sick, got drunk, puked, tried to get sober by drinking hot coffee, burned my leg. My parents came home early, yelled and screamed, you know, and it was a terrible experience, my first experience getting drunk, absolutely horrible. But I'm an alcoholic. You know, that situation passed, and I continued to do the same thing for the next 20-some odd years. When I was younger, I was heavy, and I always was self-conscious, and I wanted to be strong, I wanted to be muscular, I wanted to have good-looking girlfriends, I wanted to have a nice car, I wanted to have great clothes. Never realizing that these things just don't come. One needs to work for these things. And it was always a lot of wishing, and I want, and I want, and I stuffed my feelings a lot with other substances early, you know, sugar, food. My brother used to call me Baby Huey. The lady downstairs used to say we always know when the TV commercials are on because we can hear Bobby running to the refrigerator. And that's how I was. Gratification, gratification. When I was 16 years old, I started trimming down, It was 1962, and at that time, tough guys always wanted to be a tough guy. Quit high school, and I went to Richmond Hill High School in Jamaica, and I told my parents I'm going to quit. They came out to the school with me, and I remember sitting in the office with the principal, Miss Koch. My father was there wanting to kill me. My mother was there crying. I was sitting there with a black shirt on, black pants, black shoes, black sunglasses. Tough guys wore black. And I was sitting there, you know, wise guy. Assistant principal said to my parents, Mr. Neumeier, he's very smart, but he's going to learn the hard way. My attitude, yeah, right. Don't worry about it. I'm okay. I'm fine. So I was out of school, and my father wanted me to get a job. This big, tough guy, you know, wants me to get a job, and I'm thinking, well, you're working, mom's working, what do I got to have a job for? You know, but I got jobs. I worked in a clothing store, I stole clothes, and, you know, I was a member of a singing group. We sung doo-wops on the corner, drank a lot of wine, not champagne, Swiss Up, Peppermint Twist, Twister, Muscatel, T-Bird, Gypsy Rose. Every time I drank to the bottom of the bottle. Every time I drank, I knew I was drinking to get drunk, for no other reason, not for the taste, to get drunk. I drove drunk for the first time when I was 16, stole my father's car, took it out to Rockaway, 1958 Oldsmobile, white convertible. Could have killed myself and a lot of people that night, drove the car home, didn't get caught, forgot about it. Stole the car over and over again until I got caught. When I got caught, I got some punishment. My parents were real good people, but great enablers, and that was the golden boy. I was little Bobby, the most intelligent. Bobby's going to go to college, Bobby's going to do this, and I fed off all of that and used it. And from the age of 16 to 17, I was a thug, singing the doo-wops and hanging out and drinking wine and getting in trouble. And I was heading down a very dangerous road at 17. I knew it, so I left town. I joined the military. Had no idea there was a war going on. You know, I just left. I said, I'm going to join the Air Force. And I left town. You know, and I went to the Air Force for 4 years. They sent me to Europe for 3 years. I was stationed in Germany, England, France, all over Europe. You know, and a lot of drinking. You know, a lot of alcohol over in Germany, you know, the beer and the Ratzeputz and the schnapps and a lot of boozing. And came out of the service at 21, started to get jobs. My first job was in a men's shelter, 83rd Street in the Bowery. I was afraid to work in that neighborhood. You see, I was born in Glendale, Queens. I never let anybody know that, especially overseas. When you asked me where I was from Brooklyn. Tough guys from Brooklyn. I was so insecure about myself, I thought that if I told you I was from Queens, you'd think I was one. So I would never mention the word Queens or anything feminine or anything. I was so insecure. You know, Brooklyn, tough guy, Brooklyn. I said that so much I started to believe it. You know, so here I am working the Lower East Side. About 1968, became a hippie type, grew my hair long, started lifting weights, wearing shorts and sandals and tank top, and I bought a 1966 Triumph TR4. I'm living with my boss, who's the chief nurse. She's taking me to all of these clubs in Manhattan. This kid from Glendale's went to the Copacabana, and the Brasier, and the Camelot, and all of these places. You know, I'm just going along, and, you know, she's paying the rent, and, you know, I'm about 22 years old, driving a sports car, beautiful woman, living in Manhattan. I got it made. Everything outside was great. Inside, this disease was progressing and progressing. I wrecked that Triumph drunk one night out in Jamaica. Didn't kill myself, obviously. Could have killed a lot of other people. Got away with it. I was in 10 car accidents drunk. I walked away from 9. I remember my father sitting me down one night. He said, at the rate you're going, Bob, if you live to be the age of 30, you'll be lucky. And I was, yeah, right. Don't worry about it, Pop. I'm too cool. Can't happen to me. You through? Can I go now? My Uncle Joe told me one night, you're going to be in a car accident one day. You're not going to die, but you're not going to walk away from it. Yeah, right. All my life, God was talking to me through people. Never listened to anybody. Working down in the men's shelter, I started drinking a lot, getting in trouble, car accidents. You know, I lost a job because of drinking, became a welfare cop. And now this was a great job because I was a cop. I was in charge. And I worked in Borough Hall Welfare Center down in Brooklyn. You know, standing on post with the nightstick, the whole 9 yards, walkie-talkies, bottles and paper towel dispenser, 10-4K, you know, on the third floor. I mean, you know, 10-4K. I love saying all of this stuff. I loved the appearance, the badge, you know. I loved it all. You know, inside I was scared to death. We go out to lunch to a Chinese restaurant, have 15, 16 gin and tonics and an egg roll. On our way back, I'd stop at a liquor store, get a pint of vodka, bring it back to the sergeant, get him drunk, you know, and then at the end of the day, I'd be able to stand by the time clocks, so when the ladies got off work, we'd go right into the car and go out and party. But my whole life revolved around alcohol and drinking, you know, and escaping and not being honest and a big facade and a big actor. That's what I was, a big actor. I was a frightened child my whole life. And all this stuff that I was pretending to be was things I thought I was supposed to be. Had no idea what it was to be a man. No idea at all. Lost a job as a welfare cop, and a lot of drinking. You know, I got arrested, and I used to impersonate real police officers. I used to carry a gun with no bullets that couldn't even make noise, but it looked good. So I bore it on my side. I wore cuffs. I was sitting at a bar, ROK Bar on 2nd Avenue and 5th Street, and I was loaded. And I was looking out the window, and I saw guys unloading rifles from one car to another car. So I decide, I'm going to go over and lock these guys up. Where I'm going to lock them up, I have no idea. But I'm going to lock these guys up. Went over, pulled out my gun that I couldn't even make noise with, my shield, said, you're under arrest. Only by the grace of God, they were real cops taking these guys out. They came up to back me up, heard me speak for 5 minutes, said, you know, cop. Kicked me, got me in the car, took me to the 9th precinct. So call my brother, he's on a job. Call my brother-in-law, he's 103. Call my brother said, bury him. And they did, down to the tombs. You know, the whole nine yards, being scared, being locked up. I'll never do it again, but I did do it again. During this time, my mom died from breast cancer and a very powerful message she left me. She was afraid to go to a doctor. She died at the age of 56. All my life I heard, what you don't know can't hurt you. My mother taught me, what you don't know can kill you. I get yearly physicals and I take real good care of myself today. My mother left me that. Live with my dad now, drinking buddies. You know, and I lost my job, and you know, just a lot of drinking, and you know, no self-esteem. You know, living off my father. My brother used to come up, and you know, when are you going to get a job? I was scared. I was a frightened child, and terrible things happened in my life. I look back on them, but if they didn't happen, I wouldn't be where I am today. My dad passed away when I was 29 years old, and he was my last enabler. I moved back to Long Island. My sister was, and I figured, well, she could take care of me. And then she was stricken with encephalitis. She's still in a mental institution today, had tremendous brain damage. So January of 76, my father died. July of 76, my sister was stricken with encephalitis. So when she came out of the hospital, I moved in like to the house, and my brother-in-law was on a job, so I watched the kids and watched her, and she was totally different. She had to be almost restrained. And I would drink vodka all day. All day, drink vodka. And you know, this went on for about 3 or 4 months. Nobody ever talked about anything. We just drank. Something good happened, you drink. Something bad happened, you drink. We never communicated from the heart. Never did. On the night of Christmas Eve, 1976, I was drinking all day. Rosie was sleeping. The kids were sleeping. My brother-in-law was to be home in about 2 hours. And I thought to myself, it's Christmas Eve. I'm going to go out and party. I ran up the steps from the basement to the kitchen. I walked into the living room. I ran up the steps from the living room to the bedrooms. I didn't know it then, but those would be the last two flights of steps I would ever climb. I told my little niece, Donna, I'm going out for 2 packs of Marlboros. I'll be right back. Don't go, Uncle Bob. Please, something bad's going to happen. Don't worry about it, kid. Everything's okay. That night, in my 10th car accident drunk, I severed my spinal cord. I woke up in a hospital when my father had died in January, when my sister was taken to in July, and this was Christmas Eve. Have you laying on my stomach doing a lumbar myelogram, which means I was sticking a needle in my back trying to find out where it was busted. I can never remember being in that much pain. Passed out. Next thing I remember was waking up in the intensive care unit. And as I opened my eyes, the first person I saw was my big brother, who is a cop, and he was crying. And I knew right away something was really wrong here. I had never seen him cry before. There were needles in both my arms. I had a tube in my nose. I had a tube in my chest. I had broken all my ribs, collapsed a lung. I couldn't feel or move anything from my chest down. I had bitten my tongue in half, so that was sewed back together. And I was in a lot of pain. I had no idea what happened. Doctor started to talk to me about, you know, how the accident happened, and you were doing this and 60 miles an hour, and you bounced off parked cars and into the woods. Your car was cut in half. You were dead. They brought you back. And all this time, I'm thinking, am I going to walk? Am I going to walk? Am I going to walk? And finally, I heard myself ask him, am I going to walk? And he looked at me and he said, not a chance. And I remember thinking, I better cry, because if I don't cry, what did my brother think? I was so far detached from showing any kind of emotion. You know, I had to fake it. And I remember forcing tears because I thought, well, I'm supposed to cry now. I laid in the bed, I watched the clock on the wall because I knew every 4 hours I got my pain shot. I was in some pain, but I took that pain shot for the same reason I drank, to escape. In a couple of months' time, I was ready to come to Rusk Institute for my physical rehab. The night before I left the hospital, my uncle, my brother, and my sister-in-law came to the hospital with 4 bottles of cold duck. I wasn't in a wheelchair 2 months, and I was drinking again. I drank for the next 8 years from a wheelchair, and it was the worst part of my drinking. I would take nurses hostage because I needed medical supplies. I attempted suicide. I cut my wrist with a razor blade. I cut my foot with a razor blade. I OD'd on Valium and booze. I was in psych wards all over the place. Elmhurst General Hospital, Bellevue Psych. They offered me AA. Told them I can't do it myself. It's not worth doing. In August of 80, 24 years ago at this time, I was home drinking for about 2 months at my Bowery in my bedroom. I weighed 90 pounds. I had holes in both of my hips to the bone. I remember laying in bed knowing I was dying, sticking my hand underneath my hip, and I was in my hip. I remember taking ABD pads and pillowcases, stuffing in a hole in my hip, stopping the body fluid from running along all over the bed where the feces and the urine was that I was laying in so I could drink more. I never want to forget that because I know if I choose to pick up a drink, that's waiting for me. By the grace of God, my life was saved once again. They took me to the hospital. I was in the hospital for 2 years, multiple surgeries, offered me AA. Can't do it myself. It's not worth doing. Tough guy. Came back out, still continued to drink. On the morning of September 16, 1984, I was home drinking, reached under the bed when I woke up, puked, dying of thirst, knowing if I drank, I'd puke again. And a couple of weeks before this, some very nice people at the Bronx VA offered me a detox and rehab. And that morning, by the grace of God, a little voice in my head said, Bob, pick up the phone. Give it a try. Just give it a try. And I did. Picked the phone up, reached out for help. From that time until now, I haven't had a want or a need for any alcohol in my life. Went to the hospital, was detoxed, was out of my mind. Went to the rehab ward, told the guy I lost my mind. I can't think, I can't feel, I don't know what I'm doing. He said, you're not crazy, you need something to read. He gave me 6 grapevines. Only thing I've read my whole life was pornography and sports, mostly pornography. I read the grapevines, story about a guy went to a meeting, took everybody's inventory, went home to his basement and thought, maybe I don't have to die before my time and maybe I can have real friends. I felt those words. I made my first AA meeting sober on November 14, 1984, and as soon as I wheeled into the room, I knew I was home. Next day, a fellow brought a meeting to the ward, a big guy, about 6'2", not a hair in his head, big Fu Manchu mustache. He was a tough guy from the Bronx. After the meeting, I was speaking to this man, and I wanted what he had. Very strong, powerful, positive presence. He had steel blue eyes, and he kept them riveted on me. Looked me dead in the eye. Honest, right up front. No BS. Told me to make 90 meetings in 90 days, get a sponsor, get a home group, get involved. Told me to get to a meeting half hour early, stay half hour late, sit up front, get your hand up, shake the hand of the speaker. Told me to remember that feelings aren't facts, whether you're mad, glad, or sad, they didn't come to stay, they came to pass, but you do need to share them, and most of all, Bob, keep it simple. He pointed out the 12 steps in a very simple way. He said, you take the numbers off them and you put them in your life. 1, 2, and 3 are in your life every day. I have a problem, it's driving me crazy, I need help. 4 through 11, clean up, grow up, change. 12, carry the message. All simple stuff. And I said, yeah, but everything you have to but is BS. You take the cotton out of your ears, you stick it in your mouth, and you listen. You don't know nothing. That's exactly what I needed. In all my sobriety, God has always given me what I've needed. My life is a miracle. I've completed 21 marathons. I'm a 4-time winner of the New York City Marathon Wheelchair Division. My life story was published in 1995. I'm a consultant, a safety and health consultant. I have awards at home for outstanding dedication to traffic safety. From Mayor Koch. You know, AA works. AA works. I've been able to take this program and put it in every area of my life. I've spoken at hundreds and hundreds of schools. You know, I make alcohol awareness presentations. And I'm not an expert on nothing. Nothing. But God said, here, you have a gift. Use it. Every terrible thing that happened in my life was supposed to happen. Otherwise, I wouldn't have the joy I have today. I am in a wheelchair for a reason. I've accomplished more from a wheelchair sober than I ever accomplished when I was walking. I was in a very relaxing situation with a young lady some years ago, and she said, Bob, do you think you'd be in AA if you didn't have the car accident? And without even thinking, I said, there's no way I would have walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. God knew that, so he rolled me in. Just that simple. It's just that simple. I am so very grateful for AA and all my friends. The miracles in my life are too numerous to mention. What I've been able to accomplish as far as lifestyle change, I'm a vegetarian, I'm an athlete. You know, I take care of myself today. I haven't been admitted to the hospital in almost 20 years. That's odd. I couldn't live outside of a hospital when I was drinking. I come into AA, I've gone back once a year for my physical, and that's it. You know, I have great friends today. Recently, I had a situation in my life where I brought bed bugs into my house, and it was a horrific experience, and I kind of withdrew within myself, and I let fear take over. And I wasn't telling anybody because I was ashamed. I'd be sitting at breakfast in the morning, and a bed bug would be crawling on my shoulder, and I'd kill it. And I want to get out of the house. And I'd do my 26 miles and come back in. I knew something was wrong, and I couldn't reach out for help. I had forgotten how to ask for help. I made one phone call October 28th of last year. I got sober in the Bronx, and I called my sponsee, Mike C. I made one phone call. And since that time, I have a new apartment. My floor was taken up, down to the cement. I have new floor, I have new bed, I have new blinds, I have new nightstands. My place is painted, my closets are cleaned out. Matter of fact, Mike C., stand up. Mike C., Mike C., you here? Stand up, Mike C.
John C.
John C., that's it, John C., Mike's his brother. See, I see. There it is, John C., he helped me clean my closets out. Because of that man back there, I can sit here today and tell you I know exactly what's in every closet in my house, and it's clean. And I have such a feeling of serenity in my place. I let my place go. It became a speed shop, my racing chairs, my racing wheels, and all I was doing racing. And I wasn't comfortable in my space. By the grace of God and my good friends, I have a very comfortable apartment today, and it looks great. You know, now when you come to my house, you take your shoes off. I've gone directly to the other side. But I know balance is going to come. But these miracles in my life, they amaze me as I hear myself talk about them. The gratitude I have, you know, I've learned what rich is. I'm on a fixed income. I don't have that much money. I live paycheck to paycheck, and my check comes in. I am rich because I have friends today. I'm not talking about drinking buddies. I'm talking about friends. I can pick up a phone, and I know I could have a carload of guys outside my house. Things I thought were cool when I was younger, you know, to travel with a gang and make a phone call and have the boys come over. Well, today I can do that. I can do that, but I realize it's not about that today. It's about caring for another human being. And because of that, people care about me. I am so very, very grateful. When I was getting sober the first year of my sobriety, I had a pressure sore, so I had meetings in my house every night, the Road to Recovery. And Charles F. from the Midtown Group used to bring people up my house, and I had hundreds of people in and out of my house. And I grew a lot that first year, but I was listening to meetings on tape that first year. And I heard a fella, his name was Don P. from California. And when he shared, I laughed and I cried. He shared, he was of a Russian mother, an Italian father, he was raised with the Mexicans, he's left-handed and alcoholic. Take it and do with it what you want. He said in his house, he has five things that belong to him. One was a picture of Christ with a prayer, and the prayer goes like this. I sought my soul I could not see. I sought my God, and he eluded me. I sought my brothers, and I found all three. I love AA, and I love being sober. Thank you for my sobriety.